The following podcast is brought to you by the Communication and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California. Come hop in and let's take a drive back to the past. We'll be back to reality within a flash. I'm your host, Juice Dees, and you're listening to Sneaking Through the Suburbs. Hello, welcome back. Today is the second to last episode, and this episode is another interview. But with Dominican's very own Jennifer Lobovich. She is an integrative coach here at Dominican. I have taken her Navigate College course, and it was truly fun because it made my transition from high school to college much smoother, especially since I'm a commuter student. This episode, for both Jennifer and myself, we're wearing masks. Staying healthy allows me to contribute to controlling my own peace. So let's just jump right in to this interview with Jennifer. Okay, thank you for having so much time to squeeze me into your busy schedule. Thank you for sitting down with me. So let's just jump right in. You're an integrative coach here at Dominican. Can you briefly tell me a little bit about being an integrative coach?
Sure. First of all, I love being an integrative coach. I actually have two roles here at Dominican. One is integrative coach and the other is accessibility counselor. And I get that you want to talk about integrative coaching. So before I started working at Dominican, I started a private practice of being a teen coach, sort of like life coach for teenagers and young adults, which I really loved. And then I discovered that Dominican had this fabulous position called integrative coach, and I couldn't believe that an institution of higher education had actually designed my dream job and that it was something that I could apply for. So the way that I describe integrative coaching is that we advocate to students for students, and we help students to identify their goals and then pursue their goals in a really broad range. It tends to start out with an academic focus, but very often we end up working with students across a variety of things. So we talk about academics, but maybe we refer a student to counseling or to student health, or maybe a student decides to register with accessibility and disability services or use tutoring services. And so I view my work as being a connector for students. I never promise to have all of the answers. I always promise to be a resource and a connector to the right resources.
So I know many other students at Dominican, like you stated, come to integrative coaching to tell their problems or any issues that they come across. How do you control your emotions to not let it get best of you when students express themselves?
Oh, that's a really good question. I have a lot of experience working with teenagers and young adults. I'm really committed to being a supportive individual for a student. There can be a fatigue to hearing another person's lived experience. But I think naturally I'm able to do this, and I also have developed specific practices that help me to manage my emotional experience of what it means to be a support provider for another person. One of the things is that I'm really clear about my role in that relationship. And so it's not difficult for me to see the student who I'm working with as somebody outside of my own lived experience. So that's, I think, sort of the natural skill set that I have. I also have a robust practice. I think we could call it self-care or a well-being practice. And so I practice yoga daily. I go on a walk daily. I also have clear boundaries between my work life and my personal life. And so I, once upon a time, was a high school teacher, and in my third year of teaching, basically didn't sleep for a huge part of the school year because I was sort of taking home in my mind all kinds of interactions that I had throughout the day. And so out of necessity, I had to develop mindfulness practices that allowed me to create some separation between my work life and my personal life. And so I draw on that experience and have continued to cultivate practices and just even awareness when I do start to sort of mentally carry interactions with students with me. I work to sort of create some distance and some separation so that I'm able to have some downtime. I also find therapy to be really helpful, and it's not typical for student work to come into my experience at therapy, but I think that also, like, just some of the awareness that I've developed in that space does carry into my work as well and allow me to create a healthy balance, which, you know, we talk about trying to achieve balance. It's really more of a pursuit. I view it as a pursuit. It's something that we strive for, but maybe not something that we actually arrive at as a destination.
So you were talking about how you different were able to take apart your work life and your personal life. What sort of practices did you have to do to achieve that type of mindset?
Yeah, so in that third year of teaching, when I stopped sleeping, that was kind of a wild ride. I started to do things like when I would finish my work day, if I found myself starting to drift into a space of rumination where I would think through an interaction with a student, or start to think through certain details of a specific scenario that maybe I was dealing with, I would work to actively notice that was what I was doing. I think first and foremost, noticing that tendency. And then I would say to myself, basically, like, okay, we're going to put that down. Sometimes, you might have even heard me say this, but sometimes in my work with students, I'll say, you need to get bossy with yourself. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what I share with students I work with are things that I myself have found to be useful. I'm really aware, really mindful of the fact that each of our experiences is unique and different. But I do have a lot of experience in doing things and having to figure them out. And so I like to share that. So creating that mental space is one thing. And I also discovered movement, and it doesn't have to be a particular type of movement. But I find, you know, a walk and the rhythmic nature of a walk can be really helpful. So different kinds of ways of moving and resting. I did participate in a mindfulness class, which was the first time I'd ever experienced something like that. And that was really transformative because I'd never been in a space before where people were talking about mindfulness concepts and just the power of noticing and the power of just seeing what is. I also once upon a time came across a really interesting, I thought it was really interesting, piece. I believe it was based on research, and it talked about rumination. And I, as I said already, I get really deep. If I let myself go, mm-hmm. I can start to ruminate, and I will ruminate for days and days. And that's where you're just like revisiting a concept over and over and replaying it. And what I learned is if you can distract yourself with a different kind of thought for, I think it's something like 90 seconds to 2 minutes, you can sort of get yourself out of that space of rumination. And so I do use that, like I'll think about a trip that I really enjoyed or a road, I don't know, I really love travel and I find it to be really freeing. And so that's one of the things that I go to if I'm in a space of rumination.
Oh, so you just go into like the good memories.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And with intention, right? Like I recognize like, oh, hey, you're ruminating. And then I go into a space where, yeah.
Is there a specific routine that you do when you're at peace? Like, do you feel as if your peace and your inner self is slipping away?
Oh, interesting. I don't have a specific approach to those kinds of moments, but I do find that noticing and naming, and a lot of this is just happening on the inside for me. So mm-hmm. you could be in a space with me and I could be navigating this experience and nobody around me knows. Mm-hmm. But something, when something comes up for me, I will notice, and then I try to sort of acknowledge what it is that's happening. Sometimes I'll use practices in self-compassion where you say to yourself, oh, honey, what's going on there? Like you're really thinking about that a lot, where it's just a noticing and sort of treating myself the way that I would another person, with kindness and support and care, as opposed to judgment, and a harsh response.
I like that. No harsh response. Just make sure you just keep it positive to make sure you've got your whole day going on, even though there might be a lot of obstacles in your way. So I know we briefly spoke about what we can control and what we cannot control, especially in that being college. How can you differentiate between the two?
Between what we control? Are you curious? Are you asking me about the response to what we can control mm-hmm. and what we can't control?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's, yeah, I think that's super important, right? Because we all have things that are within our, there's the term locus of control. So something I can do something about. And then there are the things that are beyond our control, which is recognizing that we don't have the ability to control the circumstances, but we still have the capacity to choose how we respond to those circumstances that are out of our control. And I think it's really important to get clear on, and this I think probably came up when we were talking about goal setting, mm-hmm. but understanding, where is there room for me to do something about this thing and to change the actual circumstances? And where do I have to modify my behavior or attitude or response, regardless of what the circumstances are? And so I think that that actually is another form of pursuing well-being or self-care. I guess maybe the word surrender comes in here, which is, And to me, surrender is not giving up, like tossing your hands in the air, shrugging your shoulders and saying, oh, well, there's nothing I can do. It's the surrender piece is, okay, I failed that test. That is the reality. And so the surrender is, I got to let go of the big feelings I have about the fact that I failed that test. And that doesn't mean you ignore it, like feel the feelings of disappointment. And then allow yourself to reach a point where you can say, okay, and now that that happened, now that I failed that test, what am I going to do now in response to that thing, which, you know, maybe there was control before going into the test, but you still don't control what the test is and all those other factors. And so then what do you do afterwards? Do you pursue tutoring? Do you set up a study group? Do you look up online videos? Do you get help on test-taking skills? I think recognizing where we can make a change and where we have to accept the circumstances and then do something and then figure out what we can do given those circumstances.
Since we just talked about tests, finals week is coming.
Woo!
Woo, we're done! Since we both attend a fast-paced university, what is one good piece of advice you can give to students since we are approaching finals week?
Make a plan. Make a plan. Make a plan. And when I say a plan, I mean organize your time. Be super honest with yourself about how much time you need to study. Make the plan early. Be honest with yourself about how much time you have, how much time you need, and you've seen sort of my recommendation for time management skills. I think it's so important to do things like overestimate the amount of time you think you'll actually need on something. Not overestimate, but if you say to yourself, well, I have a 7-page paper that I need to write, I think it's probably going to take me a total of, 9 hours to write it. Break it down so that you have what you're going to do in each working session, and then pad your timing a little bit, and also recognize how long your brain actually can stay focused. I think sometimes students are like, sometimes students build out a really long time period when they're going to do this one thing. And most of us, our brains don't operate in that way. And I'm always happy to work with students on these kinds of things, because I think that the more honest we can be with ourselves about what we need to accomplish and the time we have to accomplish it in, the better off, I think, the more satisfied we can be with the results. And I say we, not in like that condescending, like we, but really meaning you, like I'm including myself in this. Like when I am very honest with myself about how much I have to do, how much time I have to do it in, and what I need to accomplish, then I actually can get a lot accomplished. When I act as though it's not really on the horizon, when I pretend like reality is other than what it is, then I really get myself into hot water and I lose track of time and I don't get things done on time and I miss deadlines and I don't do, whatever it is that I'm doing, the result isn't as robust as I would like it to be. And so let's see, if I could try to distill it down, make a plan, let it be flexible enough, like be bossy with yourself in terms of sticking to your plan, but also recognize that life is busy and full and things come up. And so be ready to pivot and make a new plan. And don't bother beating yourself up when you do need to pivot. Just recognize that that's part of the process.
I'm going to use this for financial.
Awesome. Love it. I encourage that.
This is all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for sitting down and having this conversation with me.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
I'll see you next week, definitely.
All right.
Thank you.
See you guys next week for the last episode of Sneaking Through the Suburbs. In episode 10, it is called Be Selfish. We'll just be talking about why being selfish is a great thing. See you later.